Yeah, well, you heard that jingle right there. 7:45 it is on this Friday morning here in South Africa. Right here from our city of Durban. Lovely, cool morning yesterday, of course. Alhamdulillah, excellent day. The day of Eid here in South Africa. And looking to be an excellent weekend going ahead, wherever your travel plans may be. Well, remember that to ensure that safety at all times and hasten home once you are done with the completion of your task, of your amal. Of course, 7:45 on a Friday morning means the Middle East report, and joining us as always, James Dorsey, an award-winning scholar and journalist, different perspective on the Middle East, and a senior fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies. Of course, you can follow James and check out his articles at World Wide Web, www.jamesmdorsey, all one word, .net. Good day to you, James, and thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Always a pleasure to be with you.
James, getting into discussions, of course, and Gaza and the issue of Palestine and the Palestine-Israel issue continuing, of course, for the last few months to always top the headings and the discussions coming out of the Middle East. And this time, the killing of Hamas political leaders Ismail Haniyeh's sons and grandchildren and a number of members of his families, and that's in the last, 36 to 48 hours or so since the news filtered through the international media and Mr. Haniyeh itself. Does that in fact complicate issues further that you have now taken out a good portion of the family of probably Hamas's most senior leader, and does that further complicate the matter? Does it escalate it even further? If one may ask, how could it be escalated even further than what it is already? And Israel, of course, making minimal concessions in talks, even though we are at the end of 6 months of this current crisis.
Well, even though Ismail Haniyeh said that the loss he has suffered would not influence Hamas's negotiating position, he also said that this would strengthen Hamas's resolve, which could mean that what he's saying is Hamas is not going to, in any form or fashion, back down from its demands in the ceasefire negotiations. It obviously is going to cast a shadow over the negotiations. On the other hand, we've also seen some slivers of light, if you wish, on both the Israeli and the Palestinian and the Hamas side. So Hamas, we're talking at the moment about what was initially proposed in January by the intelligence chiefs of Israel, Egypt, the United States and the Qatari Prime Minister in talks in Paris, which would be a 2 or 3 phase ceasefire that would last anywhere from 8 to 12 weeks, with a staged release of hostages in exchange for Palestinians held in Israeli prisons. Hamas has said that it would accept stages, which would mean that the ceasefire negotiations that it wants on a permanent ceasefire would only start in the second phase of the ceasefire. And Israel, among other things, has increased the number of Palestinians, displaced Palestinians currently in the south of Gaza, who would be allowed to return to the north without Israeli security checks. The problem, of course, is that the loss of Haniyeh's family or the Israeli attack on the family could heighten security measures that the Gaza-based leader of Hamas, Yahya Sinwar, and his associates take, and therefore communication between the Hamas negotiators and Hamas leaders on the inside becomes more difficult.
Staying, of course, with the region, James, Israel has recently bowed to pressure from the U.S. in particular for increased aid for Gaza. And many news agencies are, in fact, reporting an increase in the flow of aid to all parts of the Gaza area. Not near as much as what is required, and especially not near enough in the long term. But it seems that the U.S. is consistently placing that pressure. This is in contrast to the precision strikes that Israel is carrying out and has carried out in Syria and especially in Lebanon. And then you have the indiscriminate bombing that's taking place or has taken place and continues to be an issue in the Gaza Strip. And what may contrast this, that Israel is capable of precision bombing, yet why this indiscriminate bombing that is taking place in Gaza?
Well, I think there are two separate issues here. Israel is going through the motions of, to, albeit limited degree, but nonetheless, to bow to demands put forward by U.S. President Biden. And that's particularly true on two counts, as you mentioned. One is food or humanitarian aid supplies, and one is military operations. On the food, on the humanitarian aid issue, we've seen, as of yesterday, in 3 days, 1,200 trucks loaded with aid, whether fully loaded or not, go through Rafah and Kerem Shalom into Gaza, which essentially means that the fact that we haven't seen aid flow into, in substantial quantities, flow into Gaza for the last 6 months, is because the Israelis were blocking it. And that puts a hole in its narrative that the international organizations can't cope with it, Hamas is looting, there is a breakdown of law and order. That's not to say that all of that is not true. And even further than that, earlier this month, there were two convoys organized by the Palestine Authority of President Mahmoud Abbas in cooperation with the Egyptian Red Crescent, which Hamas, with violence, tried to prevent from moving inside Gaza. But that doesn't take away from the fact that the major obstacle is Israel. On the issue of military tactics, what Israel has demonstrated with the bombing of the Israeli embassy in Damascus, the killing of various Iranian operatives in Syria, and the killing in January of Hamas leader Salah al-Aruri, that it can very precisely target. And it can do so with minimal damage, except for the target itself, and with relatively low collateral damage. In other words, the death of innocent civilians. And that, of course, contrasts starkly with what we've seen happen in Gaza over the last 6 months. And that has more, I think, to do with a shift in, one, on the Israel, on the Lebanese-Syrian side, the geopolitical constraints, which the Israelis are very well aware of and do not want to violate because they don't want to see an escalation of the war into a regional conflagration. But it also has to do with a change in Israeli military culture, where the outcome of a military operation is no longer the main objective. It's the metric becomes how many people did you kill? And there, of course, that to a great degree explains what we're seeing in Gaza.
Staying with the matters coming out of the Damascus affair that took place a couple of weeks ago, Iran struggles to respond to Israel's bombing of its Damascus consulate. Iran is, of course, many may say, between and has been so, between a rock and a hard place. If they go for it, if they respond militarily directly, if not through their proxies, then they definitely are guaranteed a response by Israel and may draw the U.S. into the conflict as well, which, of course, the Israelis have been punting for a long, long time. They want to see an open-blown conflict between Iran and the U.S. But at the same time, is it playing a different game? Is it ensuring its own stability, the protection of its own nuclear capabilities, its own military, and maybe biding its time for some time in the future?
Well, first of all, I don't think that it is a given that Israel wants a war with Iran, or that it wants the war now in an effort to draw the United States in. That may be the case, but frankly, they could have provoked a war with Iran at any time in the last 6 months, and they haven't done so. So I don't think that one should, it's a fair assumption, but it's an assumption It's not an established fact. What is clear is that Israel is bracing itself for an Iranian response to the bombing in Damascus, whether that comes from Iran itself or from Iran's non-state allies. But on the other hand, Iran does not want an escalation, although it does also need to show that it is capable of defending itself and willing to act, because otherwise it loses credibility. Furthermore, what is clear is that Iran, in a sense, is looking for a way out, despite a lot of the rhetoric that's coming in out of Tehran. So you've seen the Iranians say that they would not need to respond if the international community responded with a condemnation of Israel, for example, of the bombing in Damascus, or they would not need to respond if Israel and Hamas agree on a ceasefire. Interestingly enough, the Iranian foreign minister is likely to be in New York next week for a United Nations General Assembly meeting, and that may be an opportunity for the Iranian foreign minister, and maybe indirectly with the Americans, to try and figure out a way that everybody keeps face without the threat of an escalation.
Talking about the greater Middle East, James, now a lot of focus has been put on governmental response, what the Saudi government is saying, what the Crown Prince, MBS, feels about the current conflict taking place. And granted, so because in the international media and us here sitting in South Africa, we don't really have our finger on the pulse, or there's no official poll or some sort of data to suggest what the individuals and the people on the ground of these countries actually think. But in reality, more often than not, the general public are very rarely on the same page, political page at least, of their, you know, of their rulers. And this may make the region a consistent and ongoing ticking time bomb that nobody knows when will go off. Ultimately, there's evidence of simmering anger and frustration. Jordan has seen protests for days in ahead outside the Israeli, you know, embassy, as well as other government buildings, and so has Egypt for that matter, which indicates that the public, or at least a good portion of that public, are highly sensitized to what's happening, and they want a more firmer response.
Well, I think there's no doubt that Palestine is a emotive issue, certainly across the Arab world and across the Muslim world. The issue, I think, here is, and let's keep in mind that, of course, Jordan and Egypt are the ones, in a sense, that are closest to the conflict. Jordan, half of its population is of Palestinian descent. Egypt was ruling Gaza until 1967 and has always been very closely involved in Palestinian affairs. But more importantly than that, Palestine, or the Palestinian issue, was frequently the lightning rod to expressions of discontent, social, economic, political discontent that have nothing to do with Palestine. And that... what we're seeing now is a Middle East that, without Gaza, already has significant discontent and frustration and anger bubbling at the surface. And like in 2011, it's a black swan. Nobody knows if or how that that anger will suddenly be sparked to spill into the streets. But potentially, the Gaza war and Palestine and the Palestinian issue could serve as a catalyst.
James Dorsey, thank you for joining us on Radio Islam International this morning with this discussion, and thank you for your time, and have a good weekend ahead of you, James.
Always a pleasure. Same to you. Take good care.